Shut up. I'm listening to Zdenek's English Podcast. You're listening to Zdenek's English Podcast, by far the greatest English podcast on earth for English learners since sliced bread. My name is Zdenek, and I'm your host.
Welcome back to Zdenek's English Podcast, everyone. How are you doing? I hope you are doing great. And it's time to talk about Ukraine, Russia, Donald Trump. I think we have to talk about this topic. And I couldn't think of a better guest than Hugh Deller. Obviously, he has been on this podcast here before. Welcome back, Hugh.
Thank you. Lovely to be back. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Good to talk to you again. It's a pleasure to have Hugh, an English teacher from London, back on the podcast. English teacher, teacher trainer, materials writer. But for me, more importantly, someone who is not afraid to talk about his views on Ukraine and Russia, and he tells his views publicly. And I appreciate this about you, Hugh, and that's why you are here.
Thank you. You know, it loses me friends as well as makes them.
I know, man. It's the same for me and my listeners. I know that. I used to have some Russian supporters of the podcast, and they have disappeared.
That's fine by me.
But some of them stayed as well. So yeah, it's not black and white, you know. It never is. So, Hugh, I have to ask you this big question here. Yeah. What on earth is going on?
So I think what we're seeing at the moment is the result of Trump's influence since he was inaugurated. Because Trump, I mean, for those of you who don't know, Trump has very long-standing links with both the Russian government and the Russian mafia. The links go right back to the 80s. I mean, Trump was basically bankrupt and heavily in debt in the early 90s. His whole business empire in the States, and particularly Trump Towers, became a kind of money laundering facility for Russian mafia to get money out of the country. He's long been enamored with and very well treated, shall we say, by the powers that be in Russia in various different ways. And when he came to power this time around, he came in with a promise that he was going to end the war in 24 hours. Anyone who knows anything about the Ukraine-Russia war at the moment, you know, Russia's brutal war on Ukraine.
It's going on for
11 years, essentially. And yeah, you talk to lots of Ukrainians and they'll tell you 150 years, you know.
I know, but the latest one, the
latest invasion, one, I mean, 2014, yeah. And then again in 2022.
Yeah.
And, you know, anyone who knows the context will know that the idea of a one-day peace deal is ridiculous. So I think what's happened is he obviously understands that Putin's not interested in peace. He recognizes Putin's not going to make any compromises. He has this reputation of being like Donnie the King deal maker. So he wants to be seen as some kind of great Nobel Peace Prize winner. Yeah. The only way that he can see that being achieved is by forcing Ukraine to capitulate. And I think what we're now seeing is America essentially working hand in glove with the Russians to try to force Ukraine to capitulate. And first of all, you have the kind of ambush in the White House last week, which I think is basically just a setup used as a pretext to withdraw American aid.
So that was when Zelensky wanted to finally sign that deal. There was like some sort of resources that America would invest.
Anyone who's read the deal will know the deal was bullshit anyway.
I mean, it was an attempt to sign some kind of a deal. And
they were trying to strong-arm him into signing a deal which gave a huge amount of Ukraine's natural mineral wealth away to the Americans.
Exactly.
For nothing, basically, for nothing.
But Zelensky was prepared to do it.
Yeah, We don't know.
There was something recorded. Like was it a press conference or was it some kind of debrief or
it
something?
It was a press conference.
It was a press conference, and that's when they fell out in the most unbelievable fashion. I think listeners must have seen those scenes, footages from that.
I've never seen anything like that, where you have the democratically elected leader of one country greeting the democratically elected leader of another country that's experiencing a kind of genocidal invasion. And rather than extending hospitality and kindness and sympathy to them, essentially just kind of haranguing them and browbeating them. It was just remarkable. Yeah. So since then, what you've seen is a very rapid succession of actions, all of which were probably pre-planned and all of which are designed to try to force Ukraine to capitulate. So they cut off the access to satellite technology.
Almost they did that after this fiasco, I think, because it's just like Trump isn't happy with the way he was disrespected by Zelensky. Yeah. We could say what exactly happened there.
This is the Trump line, basically, because you disrespected me, I'm going to help Russia kill more of his people, basically.
I don't understand. I don't get it. I thought America is like with Europe and...
America was with Europe and now is no longer with Europe.
How can this happen like that? Like, he does, isn't
it? I think it's been a long time coming because I think there's a deep strain of isolationist thinking within America, always has been. And I think what's happened in the last 10, 12 years with social media, with the internet, with the Republicans, with MAGA, with QAnon, with all of the kind of COVID conspiracy flooding the zone. Oh, I've frozen. One sec.
Sorry, you're back. You've melted. You've melted again.
Well, there's been an ongoing radicalization process of the American public to the level that you have this kind of cult-like belief that whatever Trump says or does must be true. And I think they've been cultivating that for a long time through social media and through messaging and through propaganda.
Yeah.
You know?
But surely, like... This makes no sense. Like, they are Europe's ally. They have been for years. Like, after the Second World War, we were together during the Cold War. Surely you wouldn't believe Vladimir Putin, Russia, a state that is visibly corrupt, a state where they persecute anyone who disagrees with them. Yeah, they will kill or send to prison the journalists. They do it. There's a lot of evidence of that, right?
Yeah.
Surely you wouldn't believe those guys over European allies.
That's the kind of way Trump wants to rule. So I think Trump, like Putin, is looking at the situation and thinking, if I'm not careful, I'm going to die in prison. Okay? I mean, you know, this is also Putin's fear. He's going to die in a hole in the ground like Gaddafi, killed by his own people, or he's going to die in The Hague. And I think Trump also understands that there's a long set of legal challenges against him and that
he
could easily die in prison. So what he's looking at is he's looking at the way people like Putin run Russia, and he's thinking, do you know what? That's the way I want to go, because that way no one fucks with me. You know, no one sticks me in prison. I rule everything. He's a mafia boss, Trump, basically. He's a mafia boss surrounded by tech bros who also don't believe in democracy because they're so rich that democracy hinders them rather than helps them. So I think he admires Russia. And I think the way he thinks about the world is there's maybe three great power blocks. There's Russia, China, and America. And they're just going to carve up the world between them and everyone else caught in between. Tough shit. You know, you're someone else. You're someone's sphere of influence. So I think it's going back to that kind of weird way of thinking that the two or three great imperial powers just carve up the world between them.
Yeah.
And I think it's also a profound misunderstanding and underestimation of Ukraine, because it's like, if Putin hasn't been able to force Ukraine to capitulate after all these years of throwing everything he's got at them, the idea that they're going to just roll over and, you know, beg the Americans, I think, is delusional. I mean, it's only someone who doesn't understand Ukraine can believe this.
But what would it change anyway? Like, you want to publicly humiliate Zelensky, you ask him, have you thanked us enough? Why do you hate this guy? Why do you hate Putin? He implied that as well, right?
Yeah,
his vice.
What's he done to upset you?
He told him, what's he done to upset you? Why do you hate this guy so much?
Yeah, like, basically. Yeah.
Why would you say it's like you really want to bully him, or you want to?
They want to bully him and they want to belittle
him. But what
are
they with that? Like, are they going to have a stronger position, like a stronger negotiating position?
I think they're looking to discredit Zelensky. They're looking to discredit the idea that Zelensky represents a country who that's fighting for its life, that Zelensky is a representative of those people who can be trusted and who's honorable. They're looking to say, you can't trust him. Look, he doesn't want peace. He wants war. We want peace. They want war. Mr. Putin wants peace. I can tell you that now. You know, that's why he keeps bombing Ukraine. But Mr. Putin wants peace and Zelensky's the problem. If we could get rid of Zelensky, then we wouldn't have this problem. And I think what you then saw yesterday was another plan that backfired on him, where he was talking to Poroshenko's people and Rapunzel woman.
I've no idea.
Yulia Tymoshenko. So he was talking to two previous presidents of Ukraine and trying to get them to sort of, you know, would you be interested in trying to stage elections? So they're now trying to say he's undemocratic, he's a dictator, we have to get rid of him. And I think the reason they're doing all of this is to persuade people that actually the problem is Zelensky and Ukrainian resistance, and that if only they could get some pliable puppet-like person in there to do what they tell them, everything would be okay.
So and I this think is playing in.
It's all part of the same plan.
And this is playing into Putin's hand, isn't it? He must be really rejoicing at all this.
I mean, I follow a lot of the Russian media stuff as well, and the Russians are going crazy about all of this. You know, they're super happy about what's happening.
I bet they are. Like, I think didn't see. I don't think they saw this one coming in their wildest dream.
No. it's kind of like the above and beyond what they could have hoped for, I think. And it puts Europe in. I mean, the one silver lining to come out of this is Europe has finally really woken up very quickly, because I think most of Europe's looked at what happened and sort of gone, shit, you know, the US is no longer our ally.
And it's like
the US is working hand in glove with our enemy.
Guys, I'm sorry for interrupting this episode, but let's do a little self-promotion here. I'd like to offer you private classes with me. That's right. I'm an English teacher and I teach English because that's what English teachers do. I think studying online with me is a comfortable way to improve your English. I do work with higher levels mostly. So ideally, you are at least intermediate or upper intermediate or even advanced level. And with me, we will take one-to-one lessons and they are all conversation-based most of the time, although you can obviously have your own requirements if you have a weakness, let's say vocabulary or pronunciation or your fluency, or you just need to boost your confidence. Obviously, we can focus on that as well. And most of my students, they just need a regular speaking practice. So imagine you have a friend who you pay for speaking English with you, basically. This friend happens to be me and he happens to be a qualified English teacher as well. So, of course, you will get a lot of feedback on your English, suggestions on how to improve your English and correction. I think that's very important as well. Someone needs to tell you what you are saying wrong. Whether it's pronunciation, vocabulary, I don't know, collocations, grammar, anything. If you cannot afford private lessons with me, of course, there is the second option. You could join the Achievers Chamber, which is an online sort of speaking community that I have created. And we have got several English teachers there. It's not just me. And the members are high-level English learners, and it's a great way or great place to grow, really, to grow your English, to grow your confidence, and to socialize in English. And again, like, it's so important to have that regular speaking practice. And you can ask the members who are already there. They have been there for a reason, you know. It's been working for them, so why not try that? It's a Discord group. And the price is only €20 monthly. Obviously, that's more affordable than
the private lessons with me, which you could also go for. Of course, it's up to you. Or you do now none of that. You always have that option too. Either way, in any case, feel free to contact me at teachersdenek@gmail.com. Or, I don't know, you can... Yeah, I guess this is the best way to do it. But obviously, you can also learn about that group that I've just described. You can learn more about that on my website, which is teachersdenek.com. Thank you for your attention. And now let's get on with this episode. Let's pick up where we left off.
The US is working hand in glove with our enemy.
Yeah, I think they were in denial for a long time.
Yeah, I think so too.
Why wouldn't you be in denial if someone who you have always... It's like we took America for granted a little bit, so let's be honest. They've always been here.
Yeah.
And rightly so. And we have fought wars together. Like when they say, what did they say about the UK? That they are an insignificant country or something?
Countries that haven't been in a war for 30 or 40 years may be able to send 20,000 non-battle-hardened people. And it's like 673 British people died fighting alongside the Americans after 9/11.
Yeah, Afghanistan and Afghanistan. Iraq, right?
Yeah,
and
when they triggered Article 5 and there was the attack on Afghanistan.
And then Iraq as well, right?
Iraq as well. So, I mean, it's interesting because it's kind of united people across the political spectrum in the UK, because it's like, how dare you? How dare you? I mean... We fought alongside you in your bloody wars before. You know, did we send you a bill? No. Did we ask you to say thank you? No. You know, this is what allies do.
Yeah, it's not very friendly. Part of it is the rhetoric. I think it winds people up, including myself. It's just so nasty the way he talks, and he's just so unfriendly and undiplomatic, and it's just not tactful at all, right?
So the positive is you've seen Europe suddenly manage to agree an £800 billion defense force,
despite I think normally when there is someone who wants to veto it, they would have the power to do it. But I think this time Orban, who
they bypassed
Orban. I'm so happy about this, to be honest, because
Orban's days are numbered. Orban's
such a nuisance, this guy.
They've needed to deal with Orban and Fico for a long time, and I think their days are numbered. And
that's
either going to have their votes removed, or they're going to have their countries kicked out of the EU, or they're going to find themselves very marginalized and very sidelined. Yeah. You know,
this is democracy for me too. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but me too. You've got 24 countries want one thing and another country blocks it. It's like
and these countries are also minor countries. We have to say that, unfortunately, like if Czech Republic suddenly wants something in Europe, well, we don't have the same weight. Our vote doesn't have the same weight as Germany or Spain or Italy. And rightly so, it's a bigger country, right? Yeah. So come on, just be reasonable.
Yeah, so I think it's good. And I mean, what's also happening in the UK, and I guess it's going to happen across Europe, is there's suddenly a spotlight being shone onto our own politicians on both the far right and the far left, who are appeasers of Putin, you know. And so people like Farage, Mr. Brexit, who's had long links with Moscow, suddenly he's in a very difficult position because people are asking him, you know, do you support Trump's decision to stop, providing air defenses to Ukraine? Do you support the fact that Russia's now killing more Ukrainian civilians because Trump decided to stop? You know, it puts them in a very difficult position, and it makes their pro-Russian sympathies more transparent. And the same with Jeremy Corbyn on the far left, where, his idea is, I just want peace. Let's stop sending weapons. And it's like, how does that get peace? How does Russia killing more Ukrainians equate to peace? So I guess all across Europe, you're going to see the pro-Russian politicians start to come under much more scrutiny.
Yeah. No, this is good, you know.
There's going to be a bigger war. It's inevitable.
Do you think it's going to turn into a world war as well?
No, I think it's going to turn into a bigger European war. And
proxy.
Possibly one that will still be played out primarily on the terrain of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. But I think we'll see spillover in various ways. you know, possibly into Estonia, possibly into Finland, possibly into Poland.
Moldova.
And then there'll be all kinds of cyber attacks, there'll be sabotage attacks, there'll be terror attacks, there'll be kind of, you know, different kinds of hybrid plausible deniability attacks. But you're going to see more of that in the next year.
I think we have to defend democracy. It's just, it's fragile, but it's worth fighting for. And I don't think Russians will.
The Russian people. They won't.
They don't care, or they don't understand it, or they are confused, or it's too far for them. Yes, yeah. Putin might want to, but now if you see people start caring about democracy, like, especially in countries like mine and Poland and these countries who have seen both sides. We have seen it. We have seen how bad it can be if you don't have democracy and what difference it makes. Okay, it's not perfect. Don't get me wrong. There are problems.
You know, it's that whole Churchill thing about the least worst system.
Exactly. Yeah. Some people took advantage of it. You know, there are always some loopholes and things like that. But it's the best thing we have, and we have to defend it because you don't want to live in a country where basically you don't have the freedom to say what you think.
Yeah,
it's so important, right?
Ukrainians understand that incredibly clearly. You know, they understand what they're fighting for, and they understand what happens if they lose that. And they have done that since 2014, essentially. Yeah. You know, they've been prepared to fight to the death to protect their right to define their own future and to, you know, defend plurality, defend diversity, defend freedom, defend democracy. I think the other interesting thing that will maybe happen from all of this, well, I think Macron did a very good speech the other day, and I think he started to articulate why this is important. Because I think for a long time, people have sort of sat back. The further west you are, you know, like if you're in Poland or Estonia, you kind of understand what's happening. If you're in Germany or France or England, it's like, it's not very nice, but it's quite a long way away from me. And I think what people don't realize is, and this is where maybe the Czech situation's similar, if Ukraine is allowed to fall, what then happens is the same as what happened when the Nazis rolled into Czechoslovakia. You know, in 1938, the Nazis rolled into Czechoslovakia. The Czechs didn't really put up much of a fight. And what then happened was the Nazis took all of your military industrial capabilities and were immeasurably stronger and then pushed on. If Ukraine falls, Russia takes the Black Sea coast, it takes the breadbasket of Europe, it takes all that grain, it takes all those minerals, it takes all those resources, it takes the industrial military capability, it mobilizes all the angry, pissed off, damaged men who are left, and then it's infinitely stronger. And, you know, then what? Moldova?
There's a saying in my language, like, with more food, you get hungrier. And it's just what would happen because we have seen it in history many times.
History always
repeats itself, and this is human mind, human psyche. Yeah. It always works like that.
And they will also
it always does. People who say
who's going to stop us? You know,
people who say like, oh, they will just take Ukraine. Let them do it, and let's get it over with. We want peace. Let them take it. That's it. No, it's not how it works.
Yeah.
It's not how it works.
Profound misunderstanding of what taking Ukraine means. You know,
exactly.
Like, what does it mean to take Ukraine? They take everything there. You know, and it will be disastrous.
And it's a symbolic thing as well. Like if they can take Ukraine, well, surely they will take Georgia, Moldova.
Yeah, of course.
They will keep going. The Baltic states, and it's just you can't. Okay. Maybe not now, maybe in a few years down the line, but it doesn't matter. You can't let that happen. It's too risky. It's such a huge risk.
And in the end, either you live in a world where you believe in the, you know, sacredness of international borders and international law, or you don't. And if you don't, then you live in a world where whoever's more powerful gets to take whatever they want. And, you know, that way lies a very, very dark future for all of us.
This is like we're going back in history. Like, this is what people used to do. Like, tribes, you know, like killing each other. Whoever was stronger had better weapons.
More developed,
they would just kill the others. And they'd take their stuff, take their resources, take their food, rape their women and stuff like that, right? That's where we are heading.
Yeah.
And this is why I don't think they will succeed, the Russians. I don't think so, because I believe there are enough good Russians. I really want to think that, that don't want to fight this war, don't care about this. Whereas we do care. I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope.
I know that there's a lot. Well, I think a lot of Russians are just still trying to pretend that none of this is happening, you know, and they're just, or they want the war to end, but on their terms. So, I mean, I've lost a lot of Russian friends because you have these conversations and you say, I want peace. And I say, that's great. Ukrainians want peace. How do they get it? And 9 times out of 10, what they say is, you know, they have to respect our sphere of influence. They have to promise not to do this. We have to be given this. We have to be given that. And it's like, so you're opposed to the war, but you want to be rewarded for it. Like, what the fuck? And I think at some point you have to make the war painful enough for Russians that they realize that continuing will only bring them more pain.
And you would say, you would say that all those sanctions, that it must have done a lot of damage to them.
Yeah.
And surely did. But the problem is that the guy that is pushing the buttons and pulling the strings is Putin and or his government, guys that have enough money, that they're not going to be affected by the sanctions.
Yeah.
It's the ordinary people who are, but they are selling them a dream that, oh, what?
Yeah.
I don't
know. Making Russia great again. It's, you know, it's the same, Trump bullshit dream everywhere, you know.
Yeah. So going back to Trump, so what is his end game, in your opinion, Hugh? So he wants to be lauded as this biggest peacemaker of all time, or he wants to be like his legacy wants to live on forever, or
he wants to see how much he can screw out of whatever situation he's in for him and the people around him, and if he can get Ukraine to gift him, you know, 10 generations worth of 50% of their economy, he'll parade that around as a great deal and say what a great guy he is, even though it screws Ukraine. If he can get Ukraine just to collapse and surrender, he can sell that as having brought about a peace deal. I think he's also on borrowed time because, I mean, I saw yesterday only 4% of Americans support Russia in this war. 4%.
4%. No. 4%. And this goes to show how insignificant this issue is for Americans.
Yeah.
They must have known.
Yeah. No one voted for Trump because they wanted him to side with Russia. You know, it's not what they were voting for.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I think America's also in a very slippery place at the moment because essentially they're going down the same road that Russia went down in the early 2000s, which is they're finding out what happens when your country is taken over by an oligarchy. And the oligarchy pretends, it wraps itself in your flag and it pretends to be patriotic whilst robbing as much of it as you can. And the difference is, in Russia, they weren't very good at demonstrating and they were easily beaten down. In America, they've got guns. You know, they've got guns. Like, everyone's got a gun. And so I think it's going to get quite ugly quite quickly over there. And you're going to see big demos that are going to start to be put down and there's going to be shooting and, there's going to be more disturbances on the ground over there. And it will degenerate there. And, you know, the price of eggs ain't going to get any cheaper for anyone.
That's for sure, yeah.
I hope it serves as a moral to people in Europe as well, which is, look, this is what happens when you vote for these populist figures on the right who promise to make your life better and take you back to the golden age. This is where you end up.
Will they learn the lesson, though? Like, I can see that in the UK, at least. Like now, if you look at the polls, people seem to have realize that they've made a mistake with Brexit, not everyone, but they are in denial. Just
if there was a Brexit referendum tomorrow, it would go back to reverting to Europe. Yeah,
and I think now as well, right? So of course, the UK is in NATO, is a really important member of NATO, but it's not in the EU. So not all negotiations are with the UK, and that's silly because UK is such an important country and.
Yeah,
they are not at the table now with some of these negotiations.
But I think it's bringing us much closer back to Europe. I mean, the fact that the
meeting
after Washington was convened by Starmer and Macron, and it was in London, and they invited Turkey, and they invited Canada. You know, that was really interesting for me, that they're kind of trying to put a broad coalition together, and the UK and the French are acting collaboratively in a very constructive kind of way. And, you know, of course, in every country, you're going to get these voices saying, like, oh, the government's just trying to get into a war. And it's like, we didn't start this war. You know, it's like the war's come to us. It's not a war of our choosing. I think we'd have all have been quite happy, like Ukrainians were quite happy not to have to fight this war.
But I like this one.
War, you've got to fight it.
Yeah, I really like this one. I saw it somewhere online. Don't ask Ukraine to stop defending.
Yeah.
Ask Russia to stop attacking.
Yeah, exactly. Russia can end the war tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, Ukraine can't end the war tomorrow. So if you want to stop the war, you have to just get Russia to pull its troops out and go home, and then the war stops. You know, it's that simple. Russia carries on as it was before, you know, sorting out its problems in whatever way it sees fit. But at the moment, I think, you know, I mean, I don't actually think Putin can stop the war personally, because he knows that if he stops,
it's the end of him.
Well, it's the end of him, basically, yeah. Because
but we are talking end of him. It doesn't mean politically. It might be the end of him.
It might
physically,
be like
physically.
You know, it might be hanging upside down from the lamppost kind of end of him. And I think he's looking at Russia in 2030 with perpetual war and without perpetual war. And he's thinking that Russia with perpetual war is easier for him to control and rule over than Russia without perpetual war. Yeah.
It's not going to end well. I'm telling you this.
It's not going to end well. And, you know,
it's not going to end well for him.
When we both wake up and we find out that, you know, he's dead, because it's going to happen.
And he will be killed by his own people, most likely.
I suspect so.
We have been thinking this might happen for a long time. Still hasn't happened. But, you know, it will. It will.
It will. I think so, too. I think so, too.
He will get his just desserts, you know, because he is just unbelievable evil that he has unleashed.
Yeah, it really is. And the fact that so many Russians are prepared to participate in this. I was chatting this morning to a Russian friend of mine who's now in Dubai, where she's teaching, and she fled. Mm-hmm. And she was asking me if I was in touch with various people that we both used to know. And I was sort of saying, not that one, not that one, fell out with that one, not that one. And she said, oh, good, because I don't talk to any of them. And, you know, I think what she was saying was she was so shocked and stunned by guys that she knew that she'd kind of grown up with, she'd been to school with, who were going off to fight. She's like, what are you doing? You know, why are you going to another country to kill people? What's wrong with you? And they're like, you know, protecting the motherland. And there's been plenty enough people who have bought into that shit and, you know, are willing to go and fight in that war. And, you know, in the end, everyone has a choice. If you go there, you have a choice.
There are things you cannot take back as well. You know, some things cannot be undone.
That's
something you should keep in mind. Yeah. If I say something terrible here on this podcast, or insult someone that is close to me, or if you cheat on your best friend or on your girlfriend or your wife, it's hard to undo those things. Yeah. You know,
actions have consequences.
And here we have, like, we are talking about people's lives.
Yeah.
And what's more important than our life and our health? Nothing. You know. They will pay for all this in the end. Let's hope it's sooner rather than later, Hugh. And thank you so much. Thank you for
everything you're doing and for talking about this stuff.
It's something that needs to be talked about, and we don't talk about it enough.
Thank you. And
one more thing. Tell us about your website again, Hugh. Where can our listeners find you?
Two quick things. I'm actually going to be in Ukraine next month. So if you're watching in Ukraine, I'm going to be running training sessions and raising money for Ukrainian armed forces in Kharkiv and Odessa. And my website is www.lexicallab.com. We do teacher training, online teacher training. We do English courses for like C1, C2 level speakers who are already great and looking to get even better. And we do some other stuff as well. So check us out. You can find me on Instagram. We've got a YouTube channel, Lexical Lab.
Yeah. And you do talk a lot about this topic on your
social
media profile. So you have like one thing is the teaching. So of course you create content to do with, I don't know, you explain teaching some vocabulary, obviously, because you are the lexical approach guy. But also parallel to that, you talk about Ukraine a lot, and I really appreciate it. So thanks again.
Understanding that, you know, we all have a role to play in the hybrid information war that's going on as well. And I don't want to get to 60 and feel like I haven't done anything to counter what's happening. Do you know what I mean? I want to feel that I've tried to make myself useful. It's the teacher in me, you know. It's like you want to feel useful.
And it's like there are several ways you can fight the war, and with guns is not the only way.
Exactly. So. No. There are many ways. And, you know, Russia knows this as well. And Russia operates the war on many levels. So, you know, by doing things like this, we're part of countering that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, then. Thanks again, Hugh. And all the best to you. And
take care. Yeah.
Good luck to Arsenal, too.
Thank you. Slava Ukraine.
Yes. Bye. Thanks a lot for listening. For more information, visit my new website, teachersdenek.com, where you can find out about my speaking group for high-level English learners called the Achievers Chamber, and download my free course, Unlocking Your English Potential, 8 Secrets to Fluency. That's teachersdenek.com.